On tonight's episode of the Gamecasters, we talk about a new Steffenfeld game that came out in 2018, talk about some other games we've played, and then do a top five. Stay tuned. Welcome back to episode 13 of the Gamecasters, and finally, after two episodes of being alone, I am no longer alone. Jeremy's back, everybody. He is back in the saddle, finally. He had a little operation, he has a new name, and his name now is...
Natalie Tyson.
Hey guys, Ryan from the future here. Something happened with Natalie's microphone this time. I don't know what, but it produces this really crazy echo effect. Hopefully it's not super annoying for you. I promise to fix it next episode, so hopefully it doesn't bother you too much. Anyway, thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of the episode. Yes, I judged him a lot at first, but now I just embrace it. You know, I love it. It's great. She's back with us. She's got a lot of opinions, and we're here to talk about them. So, as you've guessed, that's a bunch of baloney. Natalie's here with us.
Hello.
The Gamecasters 2.0, I suppose. We thought about changing the name, but I don't know.
Well, we have a sweet intro, so.
This is just like, yeah, we have to make a whole new intro. Although, Jeremy, didn't you say you were going to make some new music or something? Jeremy? Like, he can answer me back. I don't know. I really thought he did, but honestly, I don't want to do that. I like the Gamecasters name, and we're just pushing on into Volume 2. If he wants to come back, he's welcome back. Jeremy, you're welcome back.
He'll be our special guest.
Yes. other than that, I think we should just... Moving forward this way is awesome, and I'm super excited and pumped about finally being able to do a podcast together. Natalie and I have talked about this for... I don't know, years, since the beginning of the Gamecasters, actually. So now we're able to do it. And we're going to keep the format, I think, pretty similar to what we had before. A little more loose, I think. Before we had this kind of... Jeremy would put together this format, which was great. And we would just kind of go down the line. Now we're just kind of going to do free form, you know, like in... What's the skating in the Olympics where they... They don't get judged so hard on technical stuff. It's just like their artistic one, you know? They just kind of dance around the ice. No?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's what we're doing. We're just going to be dancing around the ice rather than getting judged for our triple sow cows.
Freestyle?
I don't know. That's more... Is that a rap?
I don't know.
Who knows? Either way, we're just going to be doing freeform. So I guess what we'll do first, Natalie, is introduce yourself and tell... the rabid listener that we have, what your BGG username is, and how you got into games.
Well, my BGG username is Nangy85.
What the heck's that about?
Well, my best friend, Ryan James, decided to nickname me Nangy, short for Natalie, I guess. I thought it was adorable and funny, so I just went with it. And 85 is the year I was born. Now everybody knows my age. Cool.
Do you think if I chew, this is going to make a huge sound? If I chew, should I not eat this goldfish right now?
Well, just pull your face away.
Can you hear it?
I can hear it.
Damn it.
Anyways, I got into games because, well, first of all, I've always liked games my whole life. Not these type of games, because I didn't know they existed. I was considered the game person in my family. Every time we had a family party, you know, they're like, Natalie's bringing the games. And I'd come over with a giant bag of games and we'd all play. But they were the typical games that everyone knows about, like party games, games from Target. And then Ryan started working with me and we got to talking and he said he was really into games. And I said I was really into games. And I'm sure he was like, hold on a minute, you don't know.
I was like super...
you don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he invited me at lunch to play a game. We played Splendor. That was my very first game I played with Ryan. And I loved it. And for the next year, I probably played like 100 brand new games. I mean, you think that's exaggerating?
Yeah, I do.
Oh.
But you did play a lot.
I played a lot of new games, and I was hooked. I loved, like, almost every single one of them. It was, like, the greatest thing that ever happened. And now it's probably been, like, 4.5 years.
One of the coolest things ever is when you show somebody the hobby. And it's happened. It happened with Natalie, and it's happened a lot, you know, since then, where you show somebody the hobby, and their eyes just, like, light up. You know, like, what? This exists? I can't believe this exists. Because that happened to me when I first played Carcassonne. I could not believe this hobby was even a thing. You know, we played tons of games, too, party games and stuff like that over the years. We'd have game nights. Mm-hmm. But it was never really about the games. It was always just about hanging out and having fun.
Right.
Because the games just weren't good enough to sustain this kind of a thing. But now, the games are good enough. And that's maybe one of the most fulfilling things to do, I think, is to bring someone new into the hobby. Yeah. And so it was just like that with you. And it's happened a few times since.
Yeah. I mean, I loved them. I loved the thinkier games. I mean, a lot of the games I played in the past were party games. And I loved those, but I didn't know these existed. And I remember as a kid, I would play Mastermind. And no one would ever want to play with me. And I loved it because it was so thinky. But everyone else that I played with was like, that's too thinky. I don't want to play that. And I was bummed. And so to find out that there was tons of games like that that people enjoyed and I could play, it was pretty cool. And then kind of like what you were saying, I mean, and kind of like you, playing games, I loved having game nights because it was a way to hang out that wasn't like going to the bar, which I'm not into, or, you know, spending money at the movie theater or whatever. It was like a full night of like having a blast with your friends, interacting, playing games. It's like the best time that I could think of, and I just wanted to do it all the time.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Well, thanks for that. Okay, so now that you guys know Natalie, let's find out what kind of games she likes. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, now that you're into the hobby,
yeah,
what your favorite style game is? Because for me, it changed a ton. When I first got into the hobby, we played stuff like Arkham Horror and a lot of thematic games like that. And I thought for maybe the first year or two that that was really where my tastes lied. You know, I was more of an Ameritrash type of gamer. You know, we played a lot of stuff like I said, like Arkham Horror or Last Night on Earth, or kind of games in that vein. Cosmic Encounter, which isn't really totally Ameritrash, but still felt thematic in a way that these Euro games didn't. And now I would say I swing pretty heavily the opposite direction. I'm 90%, I would say, interested in Euro games. Maybe not quite 90%, but it's big. So anyway, what about you? How are you?
Well, like I said, when I first started out, I liked everything because everything was just so brand new and exciting. Like, what is this? What is this? Oh my God. But now that I've been playing games for a few years and I'm starting to see, repetitive game mechanics and the excitement has, you know, worn off, and I can make better judgment calls. I like Euro games, just like you, and I think more specifically my favorite type of game is worker placement games. I like a lot of different types of games. Those are probably my favorite, but, you know, what are they, Ameritrash? I like those. They're not my favorite, but I like them enough that, you know, I like playing them. There are a few types of games that I don't like that I figured out. The one I can think of off the top of my head is social deduction games. I'm just terrible at them.
Sucks, 'cause I love those games. And well, you know, I don't love them as much as I used to, but that was a huge deal for a while for our group, especially with Jeff and Dave. We ate the Resistance up. That's all we would play for, you know, over and over and over. And I'm kind of past it now. Not just because you don't like them, but I don't know. I've kind of been there, done that is how I feel. You know, there's not a ton you can do in that space, really. I mean, so when some game comes out and says, you know, we're doing something brand new in the social deduction style, you know, game, I'm a little skeptical because I've played so many now. And I'm with you. I wouldn't say I don't like that mechanic because I love it. But I can kind of see why you don't.
Yeah.
So awesome. Okay. Well, we have been kind of in a frenzy since Gen Con, buying games and playing games. And I've kind of tried this year to, so we always do a 10 by 10 and we always fail. Every year we fail. So this year we're still doing a 10 by 10 and failing yep. pretty miserably. But what I wanted to do even more than that was, more than the 10 by 10, I think my list of games that I just haven't played at all has grown kind of a lot. So what Natalie and I kind of decided to do was go through a bunch of games that one or neither of us had played and just get them played. So at least we can say, you know, every game in the collection has been played once at least. So we can talk about it and so we can decide whether it deserves a spot or not. Because, you know, space is a premium. The more you get into the hobby and start collecting games, you know, the more games you accumulate over time. And I'm good at, you know, getting rid of games that don't hit for me. But still, the space tends to shrink, right, over time. So we're trying to get these games played so we can determine if we really like them or want to move them or what. So, Natalie, why don't you run on the list of games that we are playing or have played that we hadn't played?
That we haven't played? All right. Well, we came up with a list of 14 games. 1, 2, 3. We've played 8 of them so far, which I am very impressed.
Yeah, what the heck's going on with
us? Because we only made this list like what, like 2 months ago?
Not
even 6 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
So we've been like knocking them out.
Uh-huh.
The games that we have not played yet are
no, go through them all.
Oh, okay. Okay, well I'll tell you what we have not played yet. We haven't played Clans of Caledonia. We have not played Lisboa. Noosefjord. Anachrony. I don't ever know how to say that. How do you say it?
I think it's Noosefjord.
Noosefjord.
Yep. Noosefjord.
Anachrony, which I know you've played, but I have not, mm-hmm. and you really want me to play it.
Badly.
Cerebria. I think we're both pretty excited about that.
Yep.
And Lorenzo.
Lorenzo El Magnifico.
We just purchased. The games we have played in the last...
What, like month?
Month or so. I mean, we've been playing a lot.
Yep.
And these are not light games either. Include Newton, Feast for Odin, Teotihuacan, Reichelt, Orleon, Wingspan, Trajan, and Carpe Diem, which we just played today.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Yeah, we've been on a clip. Those are all pretty great games, by the way, most of them. One of them is terrible. Most of those games are really, really good. We'll talk about it.
Oh, right, right, yes.
So, since we've been playing a lot of those games, are there any you want to highlight and kind of talk about? Like ones that you're excited about? Or you were excited about that you liked that you want to kind of talk about?
Sure.
Because I can think of one if you're drawing a blank.
Well, I did really like Trajan.
Okay, so let's talk about Trajan.
That one had that Mancala mechanic.
Yep. So Trajan's designed by Stefan Feld. It recently got republished by Renegade Games. It was out of print for a little bit. They changed nothing except the box cover for some reason. It had this, like, the original box cover was like this blue, dark blue kind of cover with Trajan, who I think might be I think he's a man. I think Trajan is a guy.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Some sort of Greek. I have no clue. I'm not going to even pretend I know. But now the box is just like white, and that's the only change. There's no component change. There's no artistic change. There's nothing changed about the game in any way. So the game we just played is the same as the one that came out back in 2012, maybe 2011. So yeah, it's got this Mancala. It's a really cool Mancala mechanism for how you're playing. Each player has a little player board, and if you know Mancala, basically what you're doing is you're picking up all of the components of one, like, bowl and dropping one off in each subsequent bowl. And the bowl where your last component is dropped off happens to be the bowl that you activate. And it has, like, a little, I don't know, like an action associated mm-hmm. with it. And so then you take that action on the board, and there's like a bunch of different actions on the board. The board's subdivided into like these little mini games almost. And it's a really difficult
yes.
and at times for me, very frustrating mechanism. It's really cool and I really enjoy it overall. But there was some very, very difficult and frustrating moments for me. But what did you think?
Yes, I agree. I mean, I liked playing Mancala when I was a kid, so I thought that was super cool. But what we didn't anticipate when we were playing was how difficult it was. Sometimes there was a action you wanted to take, and no matter what you did, you couldn't get to that action because the cubes just didn't play out that way. And
yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we got frustrated. Because you couldn't just do whatever you wanted. You had to really plan carefully.
I felt like three or four times during the game. So there's like, what is there, seven bowls? Six bowls? Is there six?
I don't remember.
I think there's six. There might be seven. I don't know. Either way, I felt like, and you have all these, you know, little components in the bowls. I felt like no matter what I did, every single, I'm like, I can only do one thing. Everything's just leading me to this one bowl. Like, this one's got one. Oh, it goes to that one. This one behind it has two. Okay, it has to go to that one. The one behind it has three. It's like, what the? I can only do one action. I don't want to do that action. What am I supposed to do? So there was, it was, it didn't make me mad, but it was, it could be a little frustrating. For me, overall, the game's great.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too.
It's really well designed. It's really satisfying when you pull off a cool combo, when you see that and you can pull it off and, you know, you're not, the tile you want's not taken. Mm-hmm.
Well, another thing I wanted to say was not only do you have to, like, try to figure out how to get your cubes to land on the action you want to take, you're also trying to keep certain colors in these cubes so that you could perform this one action. And so you don't want to, like, sometimes take that color out, but you kind of need to take the action you want to take. So it takes a lot of planning and thinking and giving up on what your plan was. And it's difficult. But, I mean, we like difficult as long as it's fun and, you know, the game makes sense. I think that we don't mind difficulty.
Yeah, I agree. Difficult, I'm fine with difficult. I don't care if it's difficult, if it's heavy, if it's complex. That doesn't bother me. It bothers me if I'm...
if it feels broken.
I don't like... well, I also don't like feeling frustrated. And I did feel frustrated in that game. It's not. It wasn't to the point where I was angry or, you know, where it wasn't fun. But it had... it gave me the type of frustration that I don't really love. The part where I know there's nothing I can do at this moment. I've gotten myself into... and it's my fault, right? But I know I've gotten myself into this situation where I can't do anything, and so this turn just is kind of like, there's nothing I can do for this turn. And that I didn't like that too much.
Yeah.
But then that, but like every Steffenfeld game, you get points for breathing, so there's something to do. You're not screwed if a turn doesn't go your way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the game was insanely close, the one that we played. It was like within a point or two. So we both did really well, despite any frustration that I think both of us felt. So, yeah, that was a good one.
Which one did you want to talk about?
I think probably my so far, my game of 2019, as we're really through the first quarter of the year now, mm-hmm. Is from a publisher who I typically don't like, honestly. I've played a lot of Stonemaier games. Stonemaier has done Viticulture, which is okay. I don't think it's great. It's good. Scythe, again, good, not great. What is it? Between Two Cities, good, not mm-hmm. great, right? Mm-hmm. Those are all, they're all three of those games to me are just, eh. I haven't played Euphoria, Build a Better Dystopia. I imagine it's good, not great. So when I saw Wingspan announced, I felt, you know, kind of like, eh, I don't know. Every single Stonemaier game I've played is good, not great. We didn't even play Charterstone. Right. We had Charterstone, but I heard some good, not great reviews. And so, again, I was just kind of like, I don't know. This publisher, I'm not sure. Again, so Wingspan was announced. It looked beautiful. The components looked so good, which is typical of Stonemaier. Stonemaier has really amazing components. But I started to see some really good buzz for it. Again, not atypical of Stonemaier. For whatever reason, the hype train got to me a little bit, I guess, and I pulled the trigger on it. It came in, and I think maybe where I'm going with this is I was expecting it to be good, not great, personally. And I love this game. This game is so much fun to me. I think we've played it three times. Well, I've played it three times.
You played three, I played twice.
Every play has been satisfyingly different. I've found or happened upon some sort of combination of cards that have worked out so satisfyingly for me. And it's just been, I've just had a blast playing it. The components are super fun to both look at and handle. I mean, those little eggs, you know, those things are so freaking cool.
They're really cute.
Yeah, it's adorable. The artwork of the birds is like, oh, it's amazing. And you got your own huge player board that everything goes on to.
It's got the cool little birdhouse.
Yeah, the dice tower.
Yeah.
That birdhouse dice tower is super awesome. The rule set is so simple. I mean, right? I could teach that game in 5 minutes. And that's a big strength for it, I think, is it plays quickly. It's got crunchy decisions and it's simple to teach. That to me is a recipe for a really good game. And another thing I love about it, can you get the box for me? Actually, I want to give kind of like a shout out to the designer, Elizabeth Hargrave, because she is she has designed.
I know.
Who the heck put this away?
You?
Oh, okay. Momentary freak out here. I am so weird when it comes to putting the box on the top of the game. It has to be the back of the box has to be facing the same way as the front. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be able to sleep. It's like everything's messed up.
Who would have done that?
Some one of my enemies.
It's still on wrong.
I think it was Kyle.
Oh, really?
You hear that, Kyle? Was it you? You would know. Okay, anyway. Elizabeth Hargrave. There are not too many female board game designers. There's female board game designers out there, but there aren't that many. And I am very impressed by Elizabeth's work here, and hopefully we see a ton more from her, because this design stands, you know, head and shoulders with any other designer out there. And I think it's fantastic that we're seeing more women in design. And I think all the artwork was done by even three different women, which is maybe four different women. And it's the production, everything about this game is amazing. So girl power with this game. Woo-hoo. Is how I feel. Natalie, do you have any thoughts on Wingspan?
I know that you love this game. I like it too. I don't like it quite as much as you. And I don't really know why. I mean, when I think about the game, you know, I really do like everything about it. But the two times I played it, you know, I don't know if I like didn't do well or if that was the reason. But I kind of felt like, yeah, it was good, you know.
So you think the good, not great thing, the Stonemaier.
Yeah.
The Stonemaier curse of good, not great.
I don't know why I feel that way. Because I do like it. I mean, there's nothing that I can think of that is bad about it.
You don't like women board game designers?
I will support them and play it whether I like it or not. But, I mean, you're right. It is gorgeous. The last time we played it with Kyle, that card...
Do you mean he who put the board game box on the wrong way?
That card that you were moving around...
Oh my God,
you really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I think you giggled every time you got to move it. Like, oh yeah, I'm doing it again.
There's some really, really cool and satisfying combos to make in that game. And if you don't know Wingspan, it's everywhere right now. But a very, very quick synopsis is basically you have if it's an aviary, but you're basically attracting birds to your habitat. There's three different habitats in the game. And the birds can go in a certain one. There's only a couple things you do on your turn. Basically, you either play a bird card to your board, or you take an action from one of those habitats and then activate all the previous bird cards that you have played before, because all the bird cards have a power that you can activate. And so you're chaining things together, you're making really cool combos. Hopefully by the end of the game, you're trying to satisfy your end game goal cards and goals during the game. I love it when games have like common goals to try to get to, and also personal private goals to try to get to. I think that's always really super fun. I love that about Suburbia. I love that about Wingspan. And it's just, again, it's very quick, very fun, and has enough going on to, you know, make your brain feel really satisfied. So anyway, that's Wingspan. Loved it. What about you? You got anything else?
Nope, that's it. Well, I have a question for you. What do you think you would rate it out of 10?
Wingspan?
Yes.
Oh, geez, that's a good question. I'd probably give it a solid 8, 8.5. At this point, I think if repeated plays make me feel the same way, I would bump it up to a 9 or so.
Okay.
The only reason for me it wouldn't be a 10, I think, is probably something that I can't even really quantify. I don't even understand it. I love it. I really do like it. It's not quite to the echelon of, like, you know, my top favorite, like, Terra Mysticas and, you know what I mean, like, Keyflowers and Hansa Teutonicas and Istanbuls. For some reason, it doesn't quite give me that feeling. Mm-hmm. But again, 3 plays, and every play I felt very consistent with how I feel. So I think it's about an 8.5. Maybe it would top out at a 9 for me out of 10. What about Trajan for you?
Well, for Wingspan, I was going to say a 7 for me, because I want to make the point that I like it, just not, like, as much as you.
I think we got that point.
Okay.
I don't know why you feel the need to constantly say
it. I didn't want to make it sound like I didn't like it, because I do.
7's a good score. Yeah, 7's a good score.
Trajan? I'd say maybe, like, an 8.5.
Okay, yeah, we're like, opposites on this. I think I would give Trajan probably a 7.5.
Okay.
I recognize that the game is just so good. And a lot of these ratings for me are, you know, what have you done for me lately? You know?
Yeah.
So this last time, I played it twice. This last time we played it, I felt more frustrated. When I think back, I think, like, I was frustrated during that play. Again, I recognize it's a great game. I would play it again. The game's not bad. That play didn't go that great for me.
What was the play like the first time you played it, and how long ago did you play it?
I played it 2 years ago at Nerdfest, I think.
Oh, okay.
Bill taught it to me. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I don't remember feeling frustrated at all. I remember feeling like, this is really good. I did pretty well my first play. There was 4 of us, I think, playing.
You did really well this time, too.
I got second. Yeah, I won this time. But,
excuse me?
What?
Did you technically win?
No, I won. What do you mean? It was a win. What?
Is this the one that I won by 1 point, and then you woke up at night?
Yeah, it is. All right.
Remembering you forgot your extra 2 points. How convenient.
I woke up, I was like, Natalie, guess what? And she was like, oh, he's waking up. What? And I was like, I forgot to score 3 points in Trajan, so I won by 2.
Had to take that victory away.
I'm so sorry. I would have expected you to do the same thing if you did. But anyway, yeah, it had nothing to do with winning or losing for me. Like, I hadn't, when I thought I had lost, I wasn't just like, okay, I lost, and
no,
you know,
you,
so
I could
sour grapes.
During the game, you were getting frustrated.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, ah, it's driving me nuts. It's so difficult in a way that I, you know. But I think it might have just been that play, because, like I said, that first play I had at Nerdfest, I had a ball.
Yeah.
I thought it was awesome.
Well, like we talk about, it's hard when you play a game once and you get frustrated. You know, I try to take away the feeling of frustration. I can usually recognize that it may not happen again like this if I played it again. It could have just been that play, and I try not to judge the game just only on that.
Yep. Yeah, it's hard to do that because there's so many games to play, And typically, if a game doesn't hit for me right away, it's out. It's gone. I just don't want to waste my time on it.
Yeah, I really understand.
I mean, a controversial game for you and me that happened with was The River. I played The River. Oops, whoops. Natalie got me The River for Christmas. And I ended up playing it with my buddy Jeff. And we both, after we played it, we just kind of were like, yeah, good, not great. Good, maybe not even good. It was okay. It wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad game. It was over in like 13 seconds. And it just didn't do it for us at all. And then poor Natalie didn't get to play it because I was like, I want this game gone. But I'm not trying to open old wounds here. But but that's kind of my point is I could have kept it, played it a couple more times and see if, you know, is that really how I feel? I don't regret it, personally, getting rid of it now. There's so many more games I've purchased since then that we've played that we've loved that I don't feel it necessary to even go back to. So let's not hear Natalie's rebuttal on that one. Let's just move on to a different game. So there's another game called A Feast for Odin that I've been trying to play for, oh my gosh, like 3 years. I feel like I've been trying to play this damn thing.
Yeah.
We finally sat down and played it. And the reason was I bought two new Uwe Rosenberg games, Nusfjord and Reykholt.
Was it three? No, maybe just two. You're right.
Well, we did play Aura et Labora a while ago. Mm-hmm. If you remember Aura et Labora, we played that. Mm-hmm. And that was after I had bought Feast for Odin. But Aura et Labora was released well before Feast for Odin, so I felt okay playing that one first. But Nusfjord came out last year or maybe 2 years ago. I think last year. And Reykholt just came out. And I was pretty excited about both of those, and I knew that they were quick games, but Natalie was like, you know what? We should play... We got to play Feast for Odin first. That game we've had forever. Let's get it to the table and play. So we did, and holy cow, was this thing massive.
It's a beast.
Yeah. Do you have some thoughts on it? Nope. Okay, here I go. So this game, there's so much going on. If you don't know anything about it, it's basically the... This game was the inspiration for Uwe Rosenberg to design Patchwork. He designed Patchwork from the main mechanism in A Feast for Odin, which you have a player board, and there's all these like polyomino pieces that you're getting throughout the game that you can put on this board. You have to put on this board, I should say, to fill up space, and if you every space you don't fill up at the end of the game, you lose a point. And so it creates a ton of stress in pretty much the only way that Uwe Rosenberg can do it. Or he does it the best, I should say, this type of stress, where for a while you're like, there's no way, I'm not going to be able to do this. Nope, I'm going to lose like 30 points and I'm going to get a negative score and I'm going to hate this game and it's going to be the worst thing ever. And then all of a sudden, you know, before you know it, you're like, oh, I think I might be able to do it. And then you see these moves that are like, oh, if I take this piece, that gives me this. And then if I can go there, oh, and get that piece, oh, and then I can do this, yes. And it does, again, what Uwe Rosenberg games do to me is it makes me... I'm super stressed out, and all I can think about is how to make it work, and then I finally make it work, and it feels so good. Right?
Yes. You've been working this whole game for this end game goal, and when you complete it, it's like, yes! But like during the whole game, you're not sure if you're going to do it or not. This one, it was pretty cool. I like the patch. I mean, I really like Patchwork. I know you do, too.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty cool. Fitting the pieces together. You couldn't just do whatever you wanted. You had to put them in a certain pattern.
How the heck could you get those other, like, island
tiles? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there was these whole sets of tiles we didn't even touch. This whole part of the game, I feel like, we didn't even touch because it felt like we were like pushing like for time. There was no time to cover up your board, which had so many negative points on it. You didn't want to, you know.
Yeah, how could you get a different island tile to do it
right.
even
well,
more?
We didn't get the different island tile, but we both got like one additional tile at the very end just to try to get us a few extra points.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't the islands. It was the land ones.
Right, but yeah, the game ended and we're like, how are you supposed to do that?
Yeah, so that's a mark of his game. A game that I kind of like that, where you it's going to take more than one play to figure it out.
Yes. Just like we played, was it Teotihuacan? Was
we that did
the
play
one?
That.
Where we played the first time. And we like totally sucked. And then we played the second time and we were like,
how on earth did we do so bad?
We did so bad. Time. And we didn't realize that we did so bad until we played the second time and we were like, wow, this was a completely different game. The scores were like vastly different.
Yeah, I think I scored 85 points in our first play and 220 the second play.
Well, that was really eye-opening for me because like when I think of a game for like A Feast for Odin, I feel like sometimes maybe we just don't get it yet. You know, we're just going through trying to figure it out. In the second game, we might be like, oh, yeah, this is how you can get that island. Yep. I never for even sure. thought of that before this happened to us.
Good game, though. Really good game. I won't say I'm chomping at the bit to play it again, only because it was so much. It's going to take a ton to set up.
Long.
A ton to get through. I'd have to relearn it basically to play it again.
We can't play it on a weeknight.
Yeah, we can't play it on a weeknight because of the kids, and it's just draining. But great game.
Do you like it enough to keep it?
Oh yeah.
Then
yeah. I think if we did the rating out of 10, I'd give it an 8.
I think I'd give it the same.
Yeah, it's solid. I mean, more plays might realize it might realize a higher score. I don't see it going below that. I don't think. But it's good. I mean, it's good. It's good. We did play another Uwe Rosenberg game called Reykjolt. Oh my gosh. I don't want to spend too much time on it because it just sucked so bad. I have not played a game of his that sucked ever. He's like Mr., you know, I would say maybe my favorite designer up to this point in my life. And this game let me down so much. Reykjolt, another Renegade published game. Renegade's an amazing publishing team. They've been killing it with games, but
not all of his are the same publisher.
No. Designers don't typically do that. I mean, there's some designers that own their own publishing house, and so it's always the same. But no, different publishers will bring out different games for them.
That's cool.
Yep. Yeah, you can see Feast for Odin was come up with Z-Man. Caverna was Mayfair.
And Le Havre.
Yeah, Lookout, I think, for Le Havre. And Nusfjord. Anyway, so yeah, I don't want to talk too much about Reykjolt, but basically, you're just trying to get furthest on this track. It's worker placement, which sounded cool, and it plays in like 45 minutes, which sounded awesome. Artwork is adorable. It's got these cool components, like, you know, that hold the components, like
little baskets,
3D baskets. Yeah, it was really cool, but man, the gameplay was so terrible. It felt like literally every single game would play out the same. Mm-hmm. You're just ricocheting past one another. I have a great turn and your turn's terrible. And then the next turn, my turn's terrible because I spent all my stuff on my good turn last turn. And so your turn that you sucked, you know, last turn you had to just build up, and now your turn, this turn is going to be good, and mine's bad. And then we just go back and forth the whole game, and then one of us wins by 1 point. Yep. It was, ugh,
right, not and
good.
The biggest problem with it was that we did not see it playing out any different the next time. So,
yeah, and I don't want to take the time. Yeah, goodbye. We got enough good games. Okay, so let's head into. We're going to do a little review. I mean, we kind of did mini reviews, but we're going to do a little bit more in-depth review tonight. In typical Gamecasters fashion, we are going to talk a little more in-depth about the game that we played today. And that game is another Steffenfeld game called Carpe Diem, put out by Aaliyah and Ravensburger. It just came out last year, 2018, it just came out. He released, I think, two games last year, Carpe Diem and Forum Trajanum, or Forum Trajanum. We haven't played Forum Trajanum, but Rado had Carpe Diem on his best of 2018. There was another YouTuber, I can't remember his name, had it as his best game of 2018. Z Garcia from the Dice Tower gave it a really positive review. He said it was his third, I think, favorite Feld, which is pretty big, because Feld has, you know, I would say Castles of Burgundy and Trajan are like two of the biggest ones. So, you know, if it doesn't stack up to those two, that's not a terrible thing to say. The game is still really can still be really good. So, we got Carpe Diem to the table tonight, and Natalie, do you want to go over a little bit how it plays? Did you forget already? You forgot already.
Are you kidding me? My memory is so bad.
So this is the one where you got the big circle in the table, and you're trying to get the pucks in the center by flicking them. So
just
I got
let me
one.
Look at it.
I can just do it if you want.
Go ahead.
This is crazy. Okay. So basically, you have I have a player board. You have a player board in the middle of the table. We're in like the year 1 BC, I think, and we're basically. The theme doesn't matter, right? Who cares about the stupid theme?
Yeah.
In games like this, you don't buy them for the theme. There are some people, Rotto, that tries to, and does a good job, I would say, mapping theme onto the game. Like, here's what the designer tried to do to incorporate the theme. And that's true. I'm sure Steffenfeld really tried to think about how the theme made sense. But in this game, I promise you, when you're playing, you're not thinking about the thematic ties because you don't even really know it. You're just trying to make your own player board, you know, work with the points that that you can score. And it does look cool at the end of the game, I'll say that. But anyway, I have a player board, you have a player board. In the middle of the central board, there's this, it's kind of like a rondelle. The way the rules are written, it's like a seven-pointed star. And at the point of each star is four tiles. And then we each have a meeple that goes... And it's placed in front of one of those star sections. And when you place it there, you pick up one of those four tiles and put it in your own player board. Now, these tiles have anything on them from, like, the tops of buildings or farmland or, like a festival hut type thing or a merchant hut, I guess is what it would be called. And when you put them on your board, you have to place them kind of Carcassonne style. So, you know, grass has to touch grass. The like building has to touch like building. You can't touch building to grass, that kind of thing. And you're scoring points based on where you place them, how you place them, because there's this basically around the perimeter of each player board is a randomly determined border that has different ways to score points. And it's really, really interesting how it works. In true Feld fashion, you get points for doing a lot of different things. I wouldn't say it's as point salad-y as Trajan or Castles of Burgundy or Bruges or anything like that, but it does have about four or five key ways of making points, and there's a lot of different ways to do it. Has that adequately jogged your memory?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
what would you like to hear?
What are your thoughts about the game? Oh. How do you think it played? How do you think it compares to other Felds that you've played?
I liked the game. I liked it a lot. I think that I like Castles of Burgundy better. I don't think I know, because that's like one of my all-time favorite games, and I would play that every single day, so it's hard to beat that. I really liked Trajan a lot, too, so I'd say this would be under those two, but that's...
Why?
It was a little bit simpler, I guess.
Yeah,
there wasn't as much going on. I guess that's the main reason. You know, I kind of tend to like a little bit more complicated games. You know, if it's simpler for me, I like them still, but I don't like them as much. And I did like this game. Like I was telling you, I really like in games when you are placing pieces or components on a board, and then as the game goes on, you can like.
And the game goes on.
It makes it harder for you to place them, because then you're like, based on the rules of the game and where you can place pieces, you kind of like corner yourself and you run out of options. Like a good comparison is Sagrada. You can kind of like put your dice wherever you want at the beginning, and then based on the rules of the game, at the end when you have less options, it's a little bit harder to place your dice.
And yeah, that's a good comparison.
It's a very similar
feel,
and I like that a lot. That's really fun for me, figuring out what are your options and, you know, how can I make this work, and it makes me want to play these types of games again, because I learn from them. You know, I see what I did this time, and I know, okay, now I realize what I did to myself here. Next time I want to try something else or make sure I don't do that and maybe I'll do better. I thought it was fun. I liked it.
What'd you think about the gameplay, like how you get the tiles, the rondel kind of thing? So before you answer that, actually, let me explain a little bit. So it's really written by rules. It's a seven-pointed star. So it's, think of a star, and then at the tip of each star are the tiles you're grabbing. On the inside of each tip of the star is where your meeple goes. And so by the rules, you're kind of drawing a line with your meeple from one point of the star to the bottom point of the star. You can go to two different points of the star from where you are. And you got to pick which one you go to, and then you take one of those tiles. If all the tiles are gone from one of those places, and you try to go to that spot, you end up bouncing, and you go to the next point of the star. Or you can go back to where you came from. Some user found, on BoardGameGeek, some users found that this was really just a warped circle, and that if you were trying to calculate, you know, where your opponents were going to get to, and what tiles they might take on their turns that could, you know, potentially mess you up for your turns, it was very difficult to tell based on this, you know, bouncing around this pointed star. Like, okay, he's going to go there, but oh, then he can't go. He's going to bounce this way and go that way and then come up here. And then I guess he could try to take that tile. And so anyway, a user found that really this was just a warped circle. And so he found this way out to unwarp the circle. And when he did that, he found out that it didn't change a thing about the game mechanically. It just made it easier if you went in a circle around the star. Instead of a star, it's a circle, right? And so you basically just go, you can go anywhere adjacent to you, to the left or to the right. And that made it so much simpler to determine, okay, what can my opponent take and what can I, you know, what potentially can my opponent take that could or could not mess up my plans? And it's easier to see and play. So we played it that way. And I mean, that was, it was very simple to tell that way. And it doesn't change anything about the game at all. Other than, I guess, making it easier to see the information that would have looked a little more complex. Stefan Feld himself even entered that thread and said, you know, hey, I didn't see that. Good for you. That's great. And I think they're releasing a second edition of the game with the rules in there that talk about playing with the circle instead of the star.
That's cool.
Yeah, what did you think about that whole mechanism? You know, picking your meeple up to get tiles, and then when there's two left in a two-player game, they go away. And how did you feel about that?
I liked that. I thought that was cool. It was pretty cool. You could see easily, you know, what your opponent could take. And because of that, you know, I had a couple of tough decisions where there was something like all the way across the board that I kind of wanted to get to, but there was also something close to me that I wanted to get to. And I'm like, well, he could just take that away. Should I, you know, shoot for that, you know, before he takes it away? Or, you know, I don't know what to do. So that caused a couple tough decisions for me.
I think that was my favorite part was, oh God, I need that tile. If she gets that. And it wasn't even that, oh gosh, she could get that tile and it'll be screwed. It was more like, okay, if she takes that tile, then what do I do? So I kind of had to figure out two or maybe three different tiles that, okay, like here's my plan A and here's contingency plan B if Natalie goes and takes that, removing all the tiles from there. Because in a two-player game, as soon as the second tile is removed from one of the points of the star, all the other tiles go away and you can't get them that round. And that's, whew, that can be devastating to your strategy if you're not, you know, if Natalie has that one little loaf of bread there that she can use to just take any tile she wants to, all of a sudden all the tiles are gone and you're left like, oh my God, oh no. But I really thought that was cool. I really liked placing the tiles in your player board. That was fun. That kind of reminded me of Scarabia a little bit too, you know, because you got like, you got to work around certain things, and as the board gets more tight, you kind of realize, I need one very specific tile, you know, or else I'm not going to score 7 or 8 points here.
Right. That happened to me, you know, at the end. I was like banking on these tiles and they just didn't come out in the end. And I was like, well, guess I'm not getting any points for that.
Yep. And that can be a little bit of a bummer. So I thought the gameplay was cool. I agree with you. I would say I agree with you 100%. It was a little bit, it was lighter than I expected. for all these people saying it was game of 2018, I think I would disagree with them. I thought it was really good. I really did think it was really good. I thought it was, you know, it's a very good game in the Steffenfeld library. I think it doesn't hold a candle to Castles of Burgundy. I think Trajan is a much better game. I personally like Bruges a lot better. But it's not bad. It's very good. I think it's very good. I don't even think it's good, not great. I think it's better than that.
I do too, and I would like to keep it, and I would like to play it again.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That was basically her saying, don't sell this thing. You sell everything, you trade everything away, keep this damn thing.
I mean, maybe if we play it a couple more times and we're like, eh, you know,
it
doesn't.
Yeah, I agree. I would play it again. I'd play it again, like, tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I would play it again and see what it's like. I think it's good. I do think it's really good. This is not me, you know, poo-pooing it or anything. Right. I think it's
and
a good game.
As like, far as like a little bit lighter game, that fits very well in certain situations, even though we tend to like heavier games. You know, sometimes we just are on a time limit and we want a lighter game, and this would be a good one to pick up. You know?
Yeah, I feel like once we played it a couple times, we could probably get through it in 45 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
No. It's quick. I mean, it induces some AP as the game goes on, where you just really got to think about what tile to take, but not that much. So I think, for me, I would give it a 7.5 out of 10. The reason for that rating, most of my ratings tend to fall on the higher side. So for me, if a game is a 6, that's actually bad. That's how I feel.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, so a 7 is, for me, is like, the game is, I can tell it's a good game, but it's not for me. A 7.5 is, I can tell it's a good game, and I like it. An 8 is like, heck yeah.
You give it a 7.5?
I give it a 7.5.
I think I'd do the same.
So if it was a 7, that's kind of good, not great territory. 7.5 is like a little bit better than that. You know, I think I'll keep it around.
Yeah, I feel like 7.5 is fair, because I said 7 for Wingspan, and I think I like this a little bit more than I like Wingspan.
Yeah, so good. Consistency. Hooray! So that is Carpe Diem. And that's what we played tonight. So what we have for you in this is kind of like I said, Gamecasters 2.0. We're really kicking off the podcast, kind of brand new. We're rising from the ashes of Jeremy's dead body. Oh, that sounds terrible. No, he's alive.
No.
Sorry, Jeremy. Let's try that again. We're rising from the ashes of Jeremy's dead body. Did I just say the same thing? I said the same thing.
From the long
that's
break?
Not what I mean. What's that?
From the long break?
Yes, we had like a 2-year... Gosh, has it been like 2 years since I put out my last episode? The last two were by myself.
It may have been.
I think I might have done a best of 2016 at the beginning of 2017.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's been that long. So this is basically starting over from scratch, okay? So what we're going to do is we figured we'd kick off this first episode, which is really episode 13, with a top five. Me and Jeremy did a couple of these top fives. So we're going to do a Gamecasters Top 5, and this is our top 5 games published in the year 2018. Because like I said, after Gen Con, we just kind of like played, and we played enough games, Natalie and I, that were published in 2018 that we feel comfortable doing a top 5. I could have done a top 10, because there's a lot of games I cut that I was just kind of like, I don't know. do you want to go first? We're going to start at 5 and go to 1?
Sure.
All right, so the Gamecasters Top 5, March 31st, 2019 is the date of this recording. This is our Top 5 of 2018. Natalie, hit us with number 5.
Can I just say something first?
No, hit us with number 5. Go ahead.
I just want to say to everyone out there, sorry, the one person out there, that Ryan and I play almost every game we play together. So our list of games comes from the same. I don't know what his list says, and he doesn't know what my list says, so there could be some repeats.
That's fine. Overlap is cool.
Okay. Number 5. Detective.
There's more to that, right? Detective.
A modern crime board game.
Okay.
We bought this at Gen Con. Do you want me to talk about it, or do you want to say yours?
I'll just say I pre-ordered it. Usually at Gen Con, we kind of clamor and run around and try to, like, grab the games we want. Jeff and I had really gotten excited for Detective leading up to the convention. And him or I don't even remember, found that we could pre-order the game through Portal Games. And We did. So there's an example. Ignacy Trevicek, I believe, is the designer of Detective, and he owns Portal Games. So every game he designs comes out from that publisher, Portal Game, which is his, you know, he owns it, I believe. So yeah, designed by Ignacy Trevicek. Go ahead and tell us why it's in your top five and what's that all about.
Well, Detective is basically, I would say they did a very good job of simulating what a real case would be like for a detective. You have a time limit. For each case, you have a certain amount of days to come up with your findings and file a report. And each thing that you do, whether it's traveling or speaking to a witness or whatever it is, costs time. It could take an hour, it could take 2 hours, and that's how you use up the days you have. It has this really awesome website. What's it called again? Do you remember?
Nope.
I can't remember either, but basically you log in, and anytime you come across like a new person, a new suspect, you can look them up in this database, and they'll give you information that they have. It's like a police database. Anytime you find like partial...
Antares?
Yeah, I think, is that it? I think that is it.
Jeff's yelling at us from the car, the one listener. I think it's Antares.
I think it is too. Anytime you have like a partial fingerprint, you could enter it in there and see like if you have a match and
partial match.
There's all a bunch of different things. Sometimes there's like transcripts from interviews. It's really, really cool.
It's very cool.
We have like gotten really into it. We played it with our friends Jeff and Devin, and we've gotten giant whiteboards. Several of them, giant post-it notes that we'd stick on the wall, so we'd take all of our notes so we can remember every single thing we came across. We would write down timelines, we would write down our theories, and we got really into it, and it's like a whole night thing for us. I'd say that's my number five, partially because I feel like we've had a lot of fun playing with it. It's very different than anything we've ever played. We've all been kind of into the true crime stuff lately, like
podcasts, TV shows.
Yeah, even some of the other like crime games have been really fun. This is probably my favorite one, and I think it's my number five because it's one of the best games that we played since Gen Con.
Yeah, Chronicles of Crime is another one that came out.
Yeah, that one's super cool, really, but good. I don't think it's quite as good as this one.
Well, yeah, if I would say Detective is, it feels more realistic.
Yeah.
And Chronicles of Crime, which is awesome, feels more like a game. You know, Detective feels like you're actually investigating an actual crime. You're looking online, you're Googling stuff. You're entering information into that Antares database. It feels very realistic.
Right.
And part of it can get... Sometimes it doesn't feel like you're playing a game. Sometimes it feels like you're doing work. You know? Not like in a bad way. It just feels like you're doing a job.
Well, there is... You know? And there's roles for all of us to play. Like I feel like I'm always the one on the keyboard looking into the Antares database. And you're the one who's pulling the cards and reading, you know...
And Jeff and Devin are taking the notes on the whiteboard.
Jeff and Devin are taking notes. So we all have our like little roles that we play, and it's really, really fun.
It's a good game.
And another cool thing is that I believe there's like five cases, and you sometimes need information from prior cases to figure out what's going on.
Yep. And there was an expansion just released or announced. I can't remember. It's called Noir, I think.
So it's got like that?
No. We don't have it.
With Dave?
No.
Oh.
Nope. Nobody. We don't have it yet. So great. That's your number five.
Yep. What's your number five?
All right. My number five is without a doubt going to be on your list. I don't know if I want to just say it and give it. Whatever. I don't even care.
Just do it.
It's The Mind. So The Mind is a little card game that kind of is reminiscent of a game called The Game, which we really loved. That was a Spiel nominee a couple years ago. I believe The Mind was also a Spiel nominee put out by, I believe, Wolfgang Varsch, who's just tearing it up. What an amazing designer this guy is. He's done The Mind. He did Quacks of Quedlinburg. He did Illusion. He did Ganz Schön Clever. And I think a new one he just came out with called Fuji. He's just like, ugh, he's going crazy. Anyhow, The Mind, it's number five for me because with the right group and the right group only, this game is maybe the most fun I've ever had playing anything. Any other time with any other group, it's just a pedestrian, decent, whatever, run-of-the-mill kind of game for me. With the group that I'm talking about, holy cow. We'll talk more about it when it inevitably shows up on Natalie's list. My number five, The Mind.
My number four is Teotihuacan.
Yes, that's an amazing game. We talked about it a little bit, put out by NSKN. It's funny. The game's been out. I feel like you. Is it 2018? I mean, I guess it is. It was on that list we looked at. But this has been an elusive game for me. I've wanted this for a long time, it feels like. Maybe it hasn't been that long because it's only 2019. But it is a very, very cool game. Tell us why it's your number four.
Well. This is probably...
You can't remember anything about it, can you?
I just had to look up the picture.
Oh, my God!
No, I can remember it now that I see the picture.
Oh, jeez. What does it say about the games that came out in 2018 if you don't even remember what your number four is?
Yeah, I know. It's not the games. It's me. I have problems.
Do you want me to kind of give a rundown?
Sure.
Basically, this game is very awesome in that it has a rondel around the outside perimeter of the board. And you're basically taking dice as your workers and moving them around the board to take actions. And after you take the actions, usually you up the pips of one of your dice, making it stronger, making you able to do better things. If you have more than one die at the same space, you can do better things. You're building this monument up in the center of the board as one of the spaces. You're going up, you know, these tracks in another space. And it's a very, very, the word I'll use is satisfying. It has a very satisfying crunch to the gameplay. It's one of those games while you're playing it, you're like, oh my God, this is just so much fun. And that is kind of like an indefinable feature. Some might call it an X factor. Secret Cabal has been talking a lot lately about X factor in games. And I don't know if I subscribe to that really. But this, I guess, would be as close as an X factor comes to me as just something that happens when I'm playing a game that I just feel like, oh, this is so great. And I say it to myself or I say it out loud even. And Teotihuacan did that for me on a second play. Absolutely.
Yes, I agree. That is the reason it's my number four is because it was very satisfying. Like you said, I liked the building of the pyramid. It's no Terra Mystica, but I like that there was so many different things that you could do to try to get points.
Very, very cool.
I do remember being very frustrated in this game. But again, like I said, at the end of it, I was frustrated for reasons that had nothing to do with, like, the actual game. You know, it was just either, like, you took spots that I wanted or things like that.
I remember specifically there was at the end of that second play, there was this thing you wanted to do. You wanted to do it so badly, it would have given you a few extra points, and you tried racking your brain 10 different ways to figure out how to do it, and you just couldn't get there.
That's right. So my very last round was me just, like, doing whatever, because I couldn't do what I wanted to do. That's right. And so I was kind of bummed about that, but...
Yeah, that's an understatement. I remember you were not happy.
But so what does it tell you that it's at number four?
No, you're right. I know.
You know, it was a good game. I will definitely recognize that. And it was, I guess, even though that was a bummer at the end of the game, I still had fun and enjoyed the gameplay. You know, the outcome didn't, you know, take away from my enjoyment.
That's fantastic. Okay, number four, Teotihuacan. My number four is by probably my favorite boutique little publishing house, Chip Theory Games. And they're the the design team behind Hoplomachus, which was their first big game they published. And then their second one, which was my game of 2017, I think it was, called Too Many Bones. And they released an expansion / standalone last year in 2018 called Too Many Bones Undertow. And when that came out, when I finally got the Kickstarter for that, oh, I remember, it's funny, I've never made any kind of rules explanation or any, like, I think that, like, video other than for Chip Theory Games. They released a little tiny game called Trip Lock in between Too Many Bones and Too Many Bones Undertow. And I remember I got it, and I, for some reason, I recorded myself going through the rules and a playthrough of it and uploaded it to YouTube. I, like, loved it that much. And when Too Many Bones Undertow came in, I was kind of like, well, am I cooled off on Too Many Bones? Has it been a while? And I took it out and learned it, and I was like, oh my God, I remember why I love this game so much. It was so much fun. And then I did a playthrough of Gasket, the character Gasket, so people could see that and put that on YouTube. And I can't tell you how amazing a game system Too Many Bones is. And I've played it with Natalie once, and I remember you liked it.
Yeah,
you probably
don't
remember it because it's been longer than 30 minutes since we
played it. I do remember liking it.
But it is so great. I mean, the production quality, that has a big impact on, you know, how much I enjoy a game. If the production is really good, it doesn't need to have that. I'm going to tell you that. As a game like Castles of Burgundy is a testament to. But when the game is awesome, and then to boot, you have this incredible production, the level of satisfaction you get is a different level. It's a completely new, you know, level of just loving a game. And Too Many Bones Undertow has that. Chip Theory Games produces games like nobody else, and it's just, oh my God, I can't sing this game's praises enough. So Too Many Bones Undertow is my number four.
Nice. My number three is Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Wolfgang Barsch. Wolfgang Barsch. Yep. Take it away.
Do you want to explain it a
little? No, you do it.
No.
You don't remember? Is that what you're trying to say?
I think you do a much better job.
I don't know about that. But thank you. So Quacks of Quedlinburg is basically a push your luck game, which is really, really interesting to me that it's your number three, because push your luck is not your favorite mechanism. I know what you're going to say. But so basically we are all, we're like potion makers, I guess. And we are trying to, I have no idea what the theme actually is. Basically we have our own player boards in there. It's a pot, like a potion pot. And you're putting all these different ingredients into your pot, and you're trying to make, you know, more stuff and get points and get money and stuff like that. And the trick is, it's a bag building game. So you're putting the ingredients into your bag and you're pulling out these ingredients. As you pull them out, they advance you further around this like little cyclone thing in your pot. Kind of like, imagine stirring a pot, and that's like a track. And so all these tokens that you keep pulling out of the bag advance you further on this track. The further up the track you go, the higher points you get and money you get to buy more ingredients to put into your bag later. The trick is, there's these cherry bomb tokens. And if you pull out a cherry bomb token, that counts against you. And if you ever, and they have numbers on them, and if you ever get seven or more, it's either seven or more or more than seven. I think it's more than seven. If you get more than seven numbers on cherry bombs, you explode. And if you explode, you either get to score points or spend money, not both. If you don't explode, you get to do both. You get to score points and then spend money and get new stuff. So you're kind of like either reaching into the bag or stopping is basically what you're doing. And it creates this really, really like, you know, press your luck games for me are so much fun because you're just always just like chasing that feeling like, I just got to do one more. There's 15 tokens in this bag. There's only one token in this whole entire bag that can kill me. But you still in the back of your head, you're like, I know I'm going to pull that token. I know it. One out of 15 chance. The odds are amazing, but I know I'm going to pull that token. And you do. And then you hate your life. There's this Shut Up and Sit Down did a review, and they made this chart, and it's totally perfect. And it's where your emotions lie. And there's All the way to the left is you absolutely hate the game, you want to throw it in the fire. And to all the way to the right is you love the game so much, you think it's the best game that's ever been produced. And there's nothing in the middle. And that's how the game is while you're playing it. You either hate it, you want to throw it away and stomp on it and burn it, or you think it's the greatest thing that's ever happened and you can't wait to play it more. And it's definitely stressful. But anyway, that's how Quacks works. It's very cool. Natalie, tell us why it's your number three.
Yes. We played this at Nerdfest, and again, like you said, you were surprised I would wanted to play it because it was Press Your Luck. And then you were more surprised that I really liked it because it was Press Your Luck, and I don't normally like that.
It's because you won.
No, it's not, because you bought it, and I've been wanting to play it. I keep seeing it up on the shelf, and I'm like, oh, I want to play that. I even thought about asking you if you want to play it tonight.
Yeah.
You know, so I enjoyed it. It's not just because I won.
I know.
I'm just joking. I mean, I feel like it's different than other Press Your Luck games. Like, the ones I don't like are, like, Ink and Gold or Can't Stop. You know, that's just, like, you roll a dice, and you may or may not get a good number. You know what I mean? Like, this is, there's a lot more to it. I really like the bag building. Is it Newton that also has?
Orleon?
Yeah, I know we just played a recent one. I like that a lot. That's pretty cool. You know what's in your bag, and you're just hoping to get something good, and then when you pull, you know, sometimes you do, and you luck out, and sometimes you just pull a bunch of bad stuff in a row, and you're like, where's all the good stuff? I know it's in there, and it's really fun, and I also like that if you do explode, it's not the end of the world. You're not totally screwed, you know?
True.
You just get to do a little bit less stuff than if you didn't, but
there's a catch-up mechanism, right?
Rat tail? Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Sticky old rat tail.
So I do like that, you know, because I am very conservative when it comes to Press Your Luck games, and I didn't explode once, and I think I was the only one who didn't because I get too nervous, you know? I'll give up early just to avoid that, but, you know, watching you guys play, I realize, you know, that wasn't totally necessary. It didn't totally screw you up. I don't think that's the reason I won. But I had a lot of fun playing that. And the reason it's my number three over the other two games that I've said so far is because I've been really itching to play it again.
That's a mark of a good game for sure. Okay, my number three. I've been singing this game's praises ever since Gen Con because it kind of just blew me away when I got it at Gen Con. It was my number one at the time of 2018, and during Gen Con, it was definitely my favorite game of Gen Con, and it's only number three because there's two games I've played since that have just eclipsed it for me, and that's Cosmic Factory. It was originally called Chaosmos. The copy I have is called Chaosmos. I have no clue why they renamed
it. Chaosmos is a way better name,
yeah,
I think.
Cosmic Factory? What the heck is that nonsense? Anyway, Kane Klenko, the designer... I don't think he wanted to rename the game. I think he commented on a Geeklist entry that I made and said something about how it was an unfortunate thing that I had to have the name change. But I don't think he said why it did change. Anyway, either way, this game hits so many things that I love about games. It's very, very quick. It's got real-time play, which I really enjoy. Tiling is really fun. It's got that. It's got this cool scoring mechanism where your score is your least highest thing. It's always so hard for me to explain that. You basically have three tracks you're going on to, a green, a blue, and a yellow, or orange, we'll say. Mm-hmm. And whichever one on your score track is the lowest of those three is your score. And I love that because you have to watch out for all three things. You can't just, you know, run up the green track all the way to 20. Or to 25 or 30 and then score 30 points. No, because if your orange track is only at 2, your score is 2. And so you have to make sure that you do everything. And it's so fun. And it's got these cards that come out every game or every round that change the rules slightly about it. And I love that in games like event decks. Quacks Quedlinburg has that too. And it's just really, really cool. Yeah, again, what I like about this game is it plays a big number of people, and it plays the exact same amount of time, because it's real time, as it does, like, you play it with 3, you play it with 8, it's the same. It plays the same, right? You're always over and done with between 30 and 45 minutes. And I did not know about this game going into Gen Con. And I think Jeff had it on his list, and he played it and told me to demo it. And when I did, it, again, it just blew me away. And so that is my number three, Cosmic Factory.
Nice. My number two is The Mind.
My number five.
That was your number five.
Ooh, that's your number two. What the heck's number one?
I know. The only reason this isn't my number one is, like you said, it all depends on the group. But...
Oh, I know what your number one is. What am I thinking?
I know you know. I hope it's not the same
as it does depend on the group. Yes, I'm sorry. Go on.
The group of four of us, the group, if we play it with that group, it is the best thing ever. But we played it with several other groups, and it just hasn't been quite as fun. It's still fun. It's still cool. But the group of four, we just all are in sync. We know how to read each other really well. And the two times we've played with that group, we've won. And it has been, like, the most exciting, most tense, stressful, satisfying. Like, it's so awesome. It's really funny. Both times it's been on tape. Not on tape, but somebody recorded it, and
on tape. What is this, 1995?
I don't know why I said that. And so we watched it back, and you can just see, like, we're so quiet. You know, everybody's just kind of like got their little mannerisms, like their face expressions are stressed out and nervous, and you know, and when you know we get it right and we do something awesome, we just all, like, erupt in cheers. Like, it's really fun, and it's really cool. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I've experienced anything like that in a game.
Yeah, the plays with that specific group is the best thing I've ever done. Again, I think if we didn't have that experience with those four people, and the four people is me, Natalie, Jeff, and Dave, if we didn't have those experiences, I don't know that I would even remember this game. It's yeah. Every other play has just been like, eh.
Right.
It's not bad, like she said, but eh, just kind of like,
it's not even close to
it doesn't
that.
Rate. It, you know, it's like not memorable. But playing with that group.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's my funny gosh. Because the first time that happened was when we bought it at Gen Con, which was in August. And then we played it again the second time with that group in January at Nerdfest. And I did not really expect for that to happen again. I thought, oh, that was like a one-time thing. We were never going to have that experience again. And we did.
Yep,
and
me too.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
So that's my number two, The Mind.
All right. My number two was Natalie's number four, and it's Teotihuacan. We pretty much said everything back, way back when at Natalie's number four. but, yeah, I love, again, it has that thing in a game where while I'm playing it, I'm just completely enamored during playing the game. Kind of like Natalie said, it doesn't even matter so much how I'm doing. And that's how I know I love it. If it doesn't matter how I'm doing and I'm just having a great time playing it, and I'm aware of that great time I'm having as I'm playing it, so much so that I need to tell someone, then that is a great game. And for me, it's only eclipsed by one other that had exactly the exact same feeling. So we'll find out about that in a second. But Natalie, what is your number one game of 2018?
Yours isn't the same as mine, is it?
Nope, sure isn't.
Okay. My number one game is Cryptid. Is that what you thought?
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay. I knew that. Shout.
Cryptid, do you want to explain it?
You can do it. Oh. You've played this enough that you can do it.
Okay, well, I know that I told you that I dislike social deduction games, but I love deduction games. I don't know if this has like a specific name, a type of deduction, but...
No, like social deduction, I get why you don't like that, okay. Because that's about you having to interact with other people and lie, and yeah. They're all contingent about how you can keep a straight face and lie to people. Right. Cryptid is not like that. Cryptid is you're trying to ascertain information from other people to determine on the board where this specific thing is. You're deducing based on information you see, not personality traits,
right.
Or, you know, how someone can meta.
Right.
So I get the difference.
Yeah, so this one... there's a monster on the board, and it can only be in one space on the entire board. And
yeah, there's really no monster.
There's no monster?
I mean, Like, for people listening, it's not like there's something on the board. Oh, there's right. nothing. There's yeah. a space where the monster is represented
basically, there's
to
a space
be.
That you have to find. You win the game if you figure out where the space is.
Right.
And you put together these, like, map tiles in a specific way. And basically, you have a rule. Every single person playing has a rule. And we have to take turns asking people, like placing a piece on the board and asking somebody if their rule applies to this space. Is that right?
So basically...
I told you to just do it.
That's fine. You didn't do bad. So basically, she's right. Everybody at the table has a rule. It's a different rule. And everybody's rule is somewhere where the monster could be. So you have, if you're playing with five people, you have 20% of the information that you need to find the monster. You have your own. So your own, you might say, my rule is the monster could be on a place with a forest or a desert. And so I know that the monster has to be on a space with forest or desert. What I don't know is what the other 80% of the information that also applies to that monster space. So if I have, it has to be on a forest or a mountain, Natalie's might say, it's one space away from a animal sanctuary. So now, if I know Natalie's clue, now I have 40% of the information, so now I can narrow down, okay, so now it's not only on a forest or a mountain, it also has to be within one space of an animal sanctuary. And then I figure out Jeff's clue later on, which is, it's within three spaces of a standing stone. And I'm like, okay, so that narrows it down even more. So now I have 60%. So you have to, and you're trying to figure out all the other players' clues before the other players figure out all of your clues. Because there's only one spot on the board every play where this thing could be. And the fun for me is really narrowing down where somebody, you know, what somebody's clue is. And it's fun to, like, out loud be like, oh, I got you. I got you and I got you. And it kind of makes the other players like, what? He's got all the information so far? Oh, God, I got to go faster. And it's just, it's fun doing that meta version of the game. So I do like it. I do like the game.
Yeah, I love it. My favorite thing about it is that you have to get all this information and you have to figure out, you know, what the one answer is. And it's really cool because we decided, and this is not part of the rules, but we decided it is much easier to have a piece of paper and pencil that you can write down because it's hard to remember everything.
I think they say that in the rules.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, I do think they suggest that.
Okay. And so it's so cool. Sometimes I'll write down, like, okay, I think that this person's, you know, rule is this. And then I, like, ask them something and I'm wrong. And I'm like, okay, so it's not that. So it must be this. And it's, like, so exciting trying to figure that out. And when you think you know the answer, you know, and you guess it and you're right, it's, like, so satisfying. But just the whole process and the way you have to think about that, it's, like, my favorite thing. Like I said, it's kind of similar to me, like, Mastermind, where you're, like, you make a guess and then it's wrong, but you get more information for your next guess. And that's wrong, too, but then you get a little bit more information, a little bit more information until you finally figured it out. And, I love that. So that's why that's my number one.
Yep. Good game. Very good game. I don't like it quite as much as you. I do like it, though. For some reason, every time I play it, I feel like I've reached my cap of enjoyment for it. It doesn't, like, burst through like, oh my god, this is so great, but I do really enjoy my plays of it. I feel like I do pretty well at it, and it's fun. It's really fun playing it with you because you have such a good time. So do you think you can guess my number one? It's not on the screen right now.
Your number one, I don't know.
No? Okay.
Well, I feel like I should.
So this game, I've played it four times now. I've run the gamut. I've gotten dead last. I've gotten first by a ton.
Oh, I know. I know what it is. Got it.
I have
you
been...
love it.
Oh, I do love it. Well, I mean, it's number one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know.
So it's the same thing as Teotihuacan, where it gives me this feeling as I'm playing it, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is so good. I'm having such a blast. I have gotten dead last. Like I said, the last time I played it, I think I got dead last, and I had just as much fun playing it, getting dead last, than I did the play before, where I got first by 35 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same exact level of enjoyment And so to me, that tells me like, I don't care. I just love playing it. And that game is by R&D Games and it's called Key Flow. And it is basically the card drafting version of Key Flower. How do I explain it? I mean, I was just listening to a review the other day where somebody said it was more like Seven Wonders than it was like Key Flower. I disagree with that. I think it's definitely lighter than Key Flower, but I think it still feels very much like Key Flower. The last time I played with it, a guy, I think his name was Jeff too, we were talking about it, and he was like, this is exactly like Key Flower, and this is nothing like Key Flower. And those two statements are both totally true, because it's in the same universe, the Key universe, and it's almost the exact same game as Key Flower, except it takes away, you know, the biggest thing in Keyflower, which is the auction. You don't have actual meeple tokens. You're not play. There's no tiles. It's 100% cards. Instead of the auction, you now have a card draft. And, oh my gosh, it's so fun and simple and crunchy and opportunistic and random in a way. And it's awesome. Random and opportunistic might be negative words to some people, and a lot of times it is to me. But in this game, there is always something cool you can do. Always a really cool kind of bonus kind of thing, or like a cascading thing you can figure out how to do. And it just gives me that feeling like Teotihuacan, like Terra Mystica, like Caverna. There's not a ton of games. Istanbul. That do this, that make me just super excited during the play. Castles of Burgundy, those kind of games. While I'm playing the game, I'm very aware of how much fun I'm having during the game. And I think with Keyflow, I've even said every single time during the game, like, oh my God, this is so great.
Yeah,
this is really fun. Like, I really am enjoying this game. Natalie, you've played it once. Did you play it?
No, I played it twice.
You played it twice. Did you play it at Nerdfest?
I played it at Nerdfest, and I played it with Jeremy.
Yeah. Right, okay. Okay. What do you think about Keyflow?
I like it a lot too. I mean, that's not great. In my top five. But I like it a lot. I really do. I would definitely play that one.
Yeah. Often. The only problem with it for me is the setup time. It takes a while. It's like a very quick game. But the setup, you have to go through a lot to set it up, because depending on the number of players, you have to sort the cards and shuffle them and, you know, get the decks all prepared and get all the components ready, and that's kind of a bummer. Because it takes away a little bit from hitting the table because of that. Mm-hmm. But if you can get past that, it's one of the... It's my favorite game. It was the best game of the year for me in 2018. I didn't expect it to be. I backed it on a whim. I've been backing all of Richard Breese's games on Kickstarter ever since Keyflower. And it's... I think I like it better than Keyflower a little bit. Keyflower... I recognize Keyflower might be the better game, but for me... Fun factor, Keyflow hits it for me.
Yeah, you enjoy it.
I really love it. So that is the Gamecasters top five, circa, you know, era two. I guess we're in era two. This, you know what? This is era three. For two episodes, it was just me, and that was era two. I'm calling it right now. Era three has begun. We are like a phoenix, I would say, rising from the ashes of Jeremy's dead body. Did I say
Ryan.
That?
Yeah. Poor Jeremy. I hope you're not like cursing him.
Anyway, so
Jeremy, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah, exactly. Please stay alive. But if you die, I will rise like a phoenix from the ashes of your dead body. All right. For Natalie Tyson, I am Ryan James. This has been episode 13 of the Gamecasters. We will hopefully see you next week. Actually, we'll probably do every 2 weeks, I will say, because next week is a kid weekend, and it's just harder to do that, get games played, and get time to talk. So I think we're going to try every 2 weeks for now. Who am I kidding? This is probably the only time we'll do this, and you'll see me again in 4 years.
No, I hope not.
Me too. Hope not. So stick around. 2 weeks, we'll have another one for you. We might do some different stuff. We're not totally sure about the format yet, but we really, 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 really are excited about finally doing this together. And I had a great time. Natalie, I hope you did. Hope the one listener who's out there had a good time too. And I hope you come back in a couple weeks, and we'll get to episode 14. Again, until then, so long.